The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Wait, let me get up a minute. 1 second. Yeah, like, I listen to Nicole Sandler. Is it time for the Nicole Sandler show?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to turn the computer on.
Oh, man.
Let me just walk over here.
Come on, man.
I'll boot up my computer because I don't want... Oh, crap. Never mind. It's okay. I got another one. Leave it there. The cat will get it.
Oh.
Got a little tune here. A little song to sing for you. That Nicole, she does something. She's really there. And does things.
Things.
Nicole Sandler Show, whatever it is.
Whatever it is. It's a Friday, that's what it is. That's how I'm feeling. By the end of the week, I'm done. I am so, so good thing the weekend is here. By the way, it is storming here in South Florida. So if somehow you hear like a boom and we go dark, it's because it's thundering and lightning. And usually when that happens in South Florida, the power goes out. Infrastructure, you know. So, but knocking on wood laminate, that hasn't happened yet. Utzon barking out in the other room because he doesn't like the thunder. So hopefully that'll ease up. It'll stop. We won't get knocked off the air because we've got drift glass coming up. Now, if you're relatively new to the progressive internet space, you may not know Driftglass, but if you've been around for a while, he's one of the OG progressive bloggers. It was Driftglass, it was Digby, it was it's a handful of other people. They're still going strong. Driftglass still blogging at driftglass.blogspot.com, and since he married his wife Blue Gal Fran, they also do the Professional Left podcast. And I thought Driftglass would be a good person to just, you know, do the end of the week thing with, to weigh in on the affidavit, which we will talk about, and, you know, all other things, former guy and beyond. And, of course, the media and, you know, things that we like to talk with Driftglass about. So that's all coming. Now, I told you, is it hot rain? It might be. It's just, it's miserably humid out there. It's not that it's so hot. It's the humidity that'll get you here in Florida, or Florida, as the case may be. By the way, just read an article that said, let me see if I can pull it up, if I didn't close it out. And of course I did. But it was something along the lines of, moron death sentence is underwater with independence. Like big time underwater. So they don't like him. And that's understandable because he is one of the most unlikable guys in the public space. I honestly don't understand why his approval rating is around 50% right now. That's too high for him because he is really quite heinous. So yeah, they used a lot of black ink in the affidavit. Yes, they did. But I'll tell you something. It wasn't as redacted as we had heard it might be. It's about half and half. So there was actually more stuff in it than many of us expected. I expected it to be really fully redacted. And the former guy, he's just, Trump. I don't know what you can say about him. You can say a lot of things that I won't waste my time. And I'm already a little too amped up because I've been fighting with UPS today. I won a contest, me, who never wins anything. Actually, you know, it's the company called Rode that makes my mixing board, and I have a really good mixing board. You wouldn't know it from the gremlins that invade the studio from time to time. That's because I try to do things that I think I'm not, this studio's not designed to do. But anyway, Rode has this new it's called the Rode 2 something. It's a microphone system, a wireless microphone system. It comes with two wireless mics and a transmitter. And I won it for filling out this survey about the board that I use. Except there's always an except, right? It was shipped from Australia. The company's based in Australia. And damn, UPS can't get its shit together to deliver the package. I got I checked the tracking. And on Monday, it said, your package will be delivered by 7 o'clock tonight. Well, 7 o'clock rolled around. It wasn't here. Next morning, I go back to the tracking, and it says there's no tracking information available for your package. Great. And I got the same message on Wednesday. I'm thinking, oh, lovely. Well, on Thursday, yesterday, I got the message again, your package will be delivered by 7 o'clock tonight. And of course, it wasn't. And last night, again, when I went online, sorry, no tracking available for for this number. Like, what? So this morning I go back on and check it again. It says, you know, come on, say it with me. Your package will be delivered by 7 o'clock tonight. Except I knew that it wouldn't be. And it turns out my package is sitting in Kentucky somewhere. Damn Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, they're holding up my package. All right, maybe they're not, but, you know, anything I could blame on them, I will. Bottom line is UPS sucks. But guess what? FedEx is no better. And until the U.S. Postal Service gets rid of Louis DeJoy, they're no good either. So I don't know. It'll get here eventually. Look, I got new glasses delivered today, for those of you watching. I got my eyes checked before I went, to the specialist. And yeah, I can see much better out of these, but I still have to have the eye surgery next week. And I'll probably need a new prescription after I get them done. It's just, you know, one thing after another. So here we are. I can talk about lighthearted things like the affidavit. So let me share with you some of, the takeaways from this affidavit. And by the way, phone lines are open should you care to weigh in on either this whole Trump affidavit thing, or as I mentioned yesterday, the college loan debt relief plan that Biden announced yesterday. Either way, UPS is union, FedEx not union. I used to prefer UPS, but I'll tell you after this, and talking to them, I must have gone through five or six people today, and none of them had anything constructive to say. Oh, we're so sorry. Yeah, what are you going to do about it? How about call Kentucky, get my package on a plane, and make sure it's delivered tomorrow? Well, you know, can't do that. Maybe Monday? I was supposed to be here last Monday. Ugh. All right, never mind. To the affidavit. The former guy who's been shooting off his mouth for the last 2.5 weeks, saying, release the whole thing, just release the whole thing. Well, when it was imminent, when we were waiting for it to be released at noon today, before the Pacer crashed, hold that thought, we'll get to it in a moment. He was on his Truth Social, I guess, you know, bitching up a storm. It's what he does best, complaining and lying and didn't, oh my. I don't go there, so I can't read it. What I do see is when other people repost what he wrote. You know, just hold your face till your face, hold your breath till your face turns blue. And maybe you won't be smart enough to let go, to take a deep breath, and, you know, you'll suffer the consequences. I'm just so sick of that guy. Anyway, according to The Hill, I went through a few papers and saw their five takeaways. So here are the five takeaways that I came up with. One, and this was right at the beginning of the affidavit. Agents believe that Mar-a-Lago housed more classified documents and evidence of obstruction. See, this was on page 2, actually. Let me actually pull up the affidavit itself, because page 1 is introduction and agent background. Of course, the name of the agent who, I guess, gave this testimony for this affidavit was blacked out. But it starts with, says, the government is conducting a criminal investigation concerning the improper removal and storage of classified information in unauthorized spaces, as well as the unlawful concealment or removal of government goods. The investigation began as a result of a referral to the United States National Archives and Records Administration, NARA. We've heard that term used before and will again, sent to the U.S. Department of Justice on February 9th, here and after the NARA referral. The NARA referral stated that on January 18th, 2022, in accordance with the Presidential Records Act, PRA, NARA received from the office of the former guy, here and after, F. POTUS, which is a good designation for him, don't you think? F. POTUS. I know the F stands for former, but I can, you know, substitute my own F word there and feel free to do the same. Anyway, here and received from him via representatives 15 boxes of records, here and after the 15 boxes. The 15 boxes, which had been transported from the F. POTUS property at 1100 South Ocean Boulevard, Palm Beach, that's Mar-a-Lago, here and after referred to as the premises, a residence and club known as Mar-a-Lago, were reported by NARA to contain, among other things, highly classified documents intermingled with other records. Ah! Yeah. After an initial review of the NARA referral, the FBI opened a criminal investigation to, among other things, determine how the documents with classification markings and records were removed from the White House or any other authorized location for the storage of classified materials and came to be stored at the premises. To determine whether the storage locations at the premises were authorized locations for the storage of classified information, they're not. Determine whether any additional classified documents or records may have been stored in an unauthorized location at the premises, they were, or another unknown location, and whether they may remain at any such location, and identify any persons who may have removed or retained classified information without authorization and or in an unauthorized space. God, legalese is so hard. Right? A lot of words. Number three, the FBI's investigation has established that documents bearing classification markings, which appear to contain National Defense Information, NDI, were among the materials contained in the 15 boxes and were stored at the premises in an unauthorized location. And then there's some about five or six lines redacted. And here's the paragraph that I was talking about. This is the first one that made me go, whoa. Further, there is probable cause to believe that additional documents that contain classified NDI, National Defense Information, or that are presidential records subject to record retention requirements currently remain at the premises. There is also probable cause to believe that evidence of obstruction will be found at the premises. That's all you need to know. And then number four reads, I'm a special agent with the FBI assigned to the Washington field office. Redacted. During this time, I have received training at the FBI Academy specific to counterintelligence and espionage investigations. Based on my experience and training, I am familiar with efforts used to unlawfully collect, retain, and disseminate sensitive government information, including classified NDI. I make this affidavit in support of an application under Rule 41 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure for a warrant to serve the premises, known as the premises. Based on the following facts, there is probable cause to believe that the locations to be searched at the premises contain evidence, contraband, fruits of crime, or other items illegally possessed in violation of 1-8 U.S.C. Section 7-9 or whatever, you know, in the thing. And then it goes on with all the evidence, source of evidence. And it says, you know, there's this guy whose name was blacked out at the beginning and other people, it goes through later, basically, redacting the names of other people. But the document, it's 37 pages. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'll share with you a couple of write-ups and some of the takeaways. But there were other people. It was not one lone informant. It sounds like a number of people alerted the FBI and the archives and other authorities to the fact that Dump, that's what I always used to call him, D'UMP, because it works, that Dump illegally took classified government documents from the White House and brought them to his new home at Mar-a-Lago. You're not allowed to do that. So here are some of the takeaways. One, agents believe that Mar-a-Lago housed more classified documents and evidence of obstruction. That's the paragraph I just read to you. And sure enough, the search at Mar-a-Lago shows that investigators showed that the government previously retrieved more than 180 classified documents. Well, now we learned after the additional materials were taken from the premises that it was many more than that. In fact, there were between 700 and 1,000 pages of classified materials that he still had at Mar-a-Lago after he had his attorneys swear, signing, that they turned over everything they had. And you know what the technical term for that is, right?
Bullshit.
Yeah, that's it. Extensive redactions leave the Department of Justice's probable cause basis largely unknown, but not completely. It says one of the most heavily redacted sections of the affidavit pertains to evidence that led investigators to believe additional classified material was there. Toward the end of the document, a subheading reads, "There is probable cause to believe that documents containing classified NDI, National Defense Information, and presidential records remain at the premises." So that's spelled out in the affidavit, though we don't get to see everything that they enumerated before that point. But you know that they have, you know, the goods, as it were. Number three, Trump mischaracterized the level of cooperation with federal officials. If you listen to any of the right-wing, you know, propaganda, not news channels or, you know, outlets, and there's many of them, they talk about, well, he was cooperating with them. No, he wasn't. He says, you know, first of all, Trump is trying to characterize the search of his home as an unnecessary, quote, break-in. It was no break-in. It was a legally served and executed search warrant. And this document that was released today spells out the evidence they had for probable cause to obtain the search warrant. The judge who he's the original magistrate in Palm Beach County who approved the search warrant also approved this redacted affidavit to be released. And he's seen the whole thing. He saw the unredacted version, and obviously there was enough in it for him to agree that the warrant was justified. But Trump, you know, talks about, oh, you know, we've been talking to them. We've been communicating with them. All they had to do was ask. Well, no, that is
bullshit.
Again, it's bullshit. He was never cooperating with them. In fact, we've learned that he personally went through the boxes that remained at Mar-a-Lago after the 15 were turned over in January and pulled out documents and said, "This is mine, 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 it's all mine." He's like a 10-year-old. Or sorry, I'm giving him too much credit. He's like a 5-year-old. "It's mine. You can't have it. It's mine." So here's some bits and pieces from the affidavit. In prior statements, Trump noted that he put a larger lock on his storage room at Mar-a-Lago at the request of the government. Quote, "We agreed. They were shown the secured areas and the secured area and the boxes themselves." But the interaction was not as friendly as Trump suggested. Quote, "They have not been handled in an appropriate manner or stored in an appropriate location." DOJ wrote in the letter asking for the lock and the preservation of those records. The affidavit indicates that the National Archives first reached out about retrieving records as early as May 6th of 2021, just a few months after he left office. But it wasn't until December that Trump's team indicated that it did have boxes of documents ready to be picked up. And while Trump has relayed surprise by the execution of a search warrant, his legal team seemed to understand there could be pending charges in a May letter that followed receipt of a subpoena earlier that month. His lawyer tried to push back on the idea that Trump could even face charges as a former president. Evan Corcoran is the lawyer in question here. He wrote, quote, "Any attempt to impose criminal liability on a president or former president that involves his actions with respect to documents marked classified would implicate grave constitutional separation of powers issues." Yeah. But he cites only one law to back his claim that, quote, "unauthorized removal and retention of classified documents or material does not apply to the president." Well, that particular statute wasn't cited in the warrant because the governor's relying on other statutes, including the Espionage Act, which only require mishandling national defense information that could be used to injure the United States, which is what he did. Now, here's another question that's not in these takeaways here. We know that he held on to somewhere between 700 and 1,000 pages of classified documents, 1,000 pages. Donald Trump does not read, famously does not read. They had to give him these highly abridged and peppered with pictures and graphs versions of the presidential daily brief each day because he wouldn't read the actual document. It was too many pages, too many words. So I guess what he was relying on was the Richard Nixon rule that said,
well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Except that's not a law. That was his own bullshit belief that was not true. So the affidavit also did offer new details on classified records that were previously recovered from Trump, the 15 boxes, right? The affidavit points to a review of documents recovered from Mar-a-Lago in January as a basis for the search earlier this month, revealing that Trump had far more classified documents than was previously known. The affidavit includes that among those 15 boxes that were handed over to the archives, there were, this is in the original 15 boxes from January, 184 classified documents, including 25 deemed to be particularly sensitive. Those contained top secret information, such as those gained from clandestine human sources. All those lives were endangered by him taking this material out of the designated areas. That this was information prohibited from being shared with foreign governments and information obtained by monitoring, quote, foreign communication signals. So it's information about our surveillance of foreign powers and their communications. What the hell is he doing taking this stuff out of the White House? Unless he had plans to what? Sell it to one of his friends? All legitimate questions, right? What else? When the January recovery became public in February, Trump released a statement saying the National Archives, they didn't find anything. Well, that's a lie. It shouldn't surprise you because every time he opens his mouth, he lies. But the archives actually referred that matter to the Justice Department because there was so much classified material found in those initial boxes. The Senate Intelligence Committee Chair Mark Warner issued a statement. He said, it appears, based on the affidavit unsealed this morning, that among the improperly handled documents at Mar-a-Lago were some of our most sensitive intelligence. This is not okay, which we already know Trump's a security risk. If he were not president, there's no way he ever would have gotten security clearance because he's a blackmail threat. And then here's a fifth takeaway. Why Trump held on to classified materials remains a mystery. And this is the part that gets me too, because I'm just wondering, thinking about who he sidled up to while he was in the Oval Office. Kim Jong-un, Ahmed Erdogan, Vladimir Putin, you know, the Viktor Orban, the biggest dictators in the world. That's who he aspired to be and to be friends with. So here's the takeaway here. Trump's reasons for holding on to dozens of classified and that's why it's doing that. And top secret documents for more than a year after leaving office is still unclear. But the affidavit underscored the messy nature of the former guy's record keeping. That the documents recovered during that initial search in January found classified and top secret documents were intermixed with other materials in random boxes. Former administration officials have spoken publicly about the haphazard nature of document organization in the final days of the Trump administration, and he was known to throw away or rip up documents that he didn't like, despite strict rules about their preservation. Multiple former Trump administration officials, including Mike Pence and Mike Pompeo, have all said that they didn't take anything with them when they left, even as they criticized the FBI for this search, because, of course, they're not going to go against anything Papa Doc Trump wants or says. Trump has maintained that he could declassify documents unilaterally upon leaving office, allowing him to take them with him to Florida. You know what that is, right?
Bullshit.
Again, see, former administration officials and even President Biden have rejected that theory of nonsense. And in fact, today, Biden was asked about that claim that he could just declassify anything.
Come on, man.
Yeah, I don't think he said man, but he did say, come on. This is insanity. Is that the technical term for it? Insanity. And again, I didn't go over to Truth Social to find out what he was saying, but I know enough to know that, that what he was saying is all
bullshit,
as is everything else when he opens his mouth. So, yeah. Florida Meneer. I don't know what that means. Chris Frederick. Oh, and now he deleted it. So Chris writes a thing trying to be funny, I guess, in the chat room, and it didn't make sense. And I read it right when he, but now he retracted it. Okay. All right. So this is where we are. He lies, and what's left of the Republican Party swears to it. It's just incredible. Now, so here's what happened today. So I held off on putting out today's What's News segment. You know, I do this recorded news piece that runs most hours in the top of the hour on the Progressive Voices channel. It also goes out to subscribers to my podcast, which, by the way, there's no paywall there. So if you subscribe, you get the podcast for free. You also get What's News every morning. So this morning, I'm waiting and waiting for the thing to come out. You know, it was supposed to be released by noon today. So, of course, last night, all the cable news channels are teasing. It could come out any minute now. So stay tuned because you don't want to miss it. It will be released by noon, unsealed by noon tomorrow. So that's how they strung you along last night. I didn't fall for it. So this morning, still wasn't out. Getting closer to noon. It's noon. All right, where is it? Where is it? Well, the Pacer crashed is what I heard. And when I heard Pacer, all I could think of was that car from the 70s, you know, that was called like an upside down terrarium. Do you remember? I didn't pull the picture. I'd show it to you. Google it. It's up on Wikipedia. The Pacer. It was supposed to be like this high-tech futuristic car, and it was a joke. Basically, it was a joke. I at first thought it was the one that exploded when it was hit from the rear. No, that was the Ford Pinto, not the Pacer. I get those P cars mixed up. But the Pacer was just silly. So when it said Pacer, I'm like, what? They were bringing the documents in an old Pacer? What? The Pacer apparently is the email or document disbursement system that they use in the federal court systems. But because everybody, every news organization and their brother were refreshing, trying to get the documents when it was posted at noon, the system crashed. So we didn't get it for like another half hour. But we finally got it. So I'm thinking, who would I like to talk to about this on Friday and other things going on in our world? And it's somebody who used to actually do a regular segment on this show in the olden days when we were on earlier in the day, I believe. And now he appears occasionally. He's one of the OG progressive bloggers who's still at it. You know him. You love him. He is the Drift Glass. Uh-oh. Oh, come on. Oh, my intro is not playing. Damn it. Drift Glass, I thought I had it all queued up for you. But you know what? Never fear. I'm gonna try to play it anyway. if I can pull it up fast enough.
But sing, Nicole.
In the
you
meantime,
don't want that.
I don't want that.
No. Don't want me to sing.
Oh no. I won't ask you to sing. But I'm gonna. Do I have it here? I you know, it's on my Wallow sound. But the thing is empty. All right, let's try it this way. Here we go.
Take a walk through the Golden Grooveyard, kicking off a silver dollar twin spin with the Drift Glass.
When this old world starts getting me
that's the Drifters. This is Drift Glass.
Oh, sorry. Here's Drift Glass with Nicole Sandler.
Okay, now we can start.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
Oh, you know, it's been a challenge. Life is a challenge these days.
Yeah, it really is.
Oh, my God. You have no idea. It's just like nothing is easy. Yeah, you know, I have to have surgery on my eye next week. I'm going to be out Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at least.
You. All of your fans will miss you. So,
yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. We'll run out of stuff. So I'll be here, but I won't be here. So there's that. We have to move. There's that.
Oh, man.
Trying to sell the house before the bank does. So there's that. You know, just usual fun stuff.
Yeah.
So how are things going with you? How are things in Illinois?
Oh, they're fine. You know, we have this excellent governor here that we're very happy with.
Pritzker? And, is that Pritzker?
Yeah. Doing good stuff. And we have infrastructure and we're a pro-abortion state and people are starting to come across the border from all the weirdos around us who there are signs, there are billboards as you enter Illinois now basically saying, women's health care is available.
Wow.
So, you know.
Yeah, Illinois. I'd come there, except it's too damn cold.
I know. Well, now it's like 80 degrees outside.
Well, now, but I'm talking January, February.
Yeah, well, you gotta kind of take the good with the bad, I suppose. Yeah. But I am an OG, as you mentioned, blogger,
you are.
So I'm extremely cautious about being like enthusiastic or hopeful because you always get shot down, man.
Mm-hmm.
But things are going pretty good. I mean, things not with me or you.
Right.
I mean, this was the week we took third child off to college and we had, you know, just drama. Nothing terrible, but just a lot of stuff.
Okay.
But generally speaking, I am cautiously optimistic that things won't be as bad as they could be as long as Dark Brandon keeps tweeting.
Dark Brandon. Yeah. That's the biggest surprise of the year, I'd say, is Dark Brandon. The emergence of Dark Brandon. Because things were looking pretty not very encouraging for a long time.
Yes, they were.
Right? And now, all of a sudden, maybe we need to thank the Despicable Three on the Supreme Court for their overreach in overturning Roe v. Wade, because that, I think, was when the tide turned.
Oh, it's there is a groundswell out there, and I'm doing my little part. I mean, you know, my wife does postcards to voters, and we have, you know, Moms Demand action groups and all the groups we're a part of. My own little part of that is I have pro-choice dads.
Oh.
And, you know, because that is an untapped resource. And believe me, with two stepdaughters in college who I love dearly, keep your hands off my goddamn kids, you sons of bitches. How dare you? How dare you tell my girls what they can do?
Right.
How dare you? And we are, you know, and Jamie Pritzker is running against a guy named Darren Bailey, who has committed every screw up you can in campaigning, comparing abortion to the Holocaust and saying abortion is worse than the Holocaust.
Oh, my God.
It's so much worse. And then walking that back and then walking back his walk back because he's an idiot. And just he keeps doing dumb things. And there is an extremely angry group of women and their male allies, I hope, who are waiting, who are chomping at the bit to go to the polls in the fall. And I just remember in 2016, the Women's March. You might remember the Women's March in 2016. And I remember, you know, one of my favorite writers, David Brooks, just dismissing the whole thing out of hand as kind of frivolous and silly, and their silly pussy hats. And, you know, that's great, but really, who, what, what's, where's that going? And we saw where that went. So I'm counting on the incompetence of our enemies and the cluelessness of the pundits to just miss everything until it's too late.
Oh, well, of course. Now, you talk about the guy who's running against Pritzker. Remember, Driftglass, I live in Florida.
Yes, you do.
So, have you met my governor? This is what this brain surgeon said yesterday.
You have people like Fauci saying that his lockdowns didn't cause any permanent damage to any young kids. I got news for you. It did. And we are going to reap those rewards across the whole country for years and years and years because they treated kids so poorly.
Gonna reap
and I'm
for
just
rewards?
Sick of seeing him. I know he says he's going to retire. Someone needs to grab that little elf and chuck him across the Potomac.
Yeah, he sounds nice, right? Yep. Little elf, by the way. Fauci is 5'7". That turd is 5'9". Hey.
But, you know, little man on a balcony giving speeches, never a good thing.
Right.
You know, never, never a good thing.
On the other hand, the guy who's now got the nomination, because we had our primary on Tuesday, said this.
Together, we will restore our precious freedoms that Ron DeSantis is taking away. On day one of my administration, I will sign an executive order protecting a woman's right to choose.
Okay, so that's a move in the right direction.
It's the row, stupid. I mean, really, just run on row. Run on row.
That's
run
it.
Like mad on row.
Day
everywhere.
One, I'll restore. I'll sign an executive order restoring a woman's right to choose. Hello. Now, Charlie Crist is not the most liberal Democrat. No. He's the former Republican governor of Florida.
Yes,
and yet I voted for him.
Yes. And if I were there, I would have voted for him, too.
Yep.
Because, you know,
he can win.
That's exactly right. This letting the perfect be the enemy of the pre-good. let's do that in 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay? You and I meet and bitch about that in 20 or 30 years. For now, let's just get out of the hole we're in.
Yeah, you may be here in 20. I don't think I'll be here in 20 years. But,
oh, please.
You know, no, 20.
You'll be here. You'll have 2020 vision. You'll have bionic parts. It'll be great.
In 20 years, I'll be coming up on 83. No, I'm not going to be here.
Well, I'll be coming up on 83, too, so there you go.
Oh, we're the same age. Look at
coming
that.
Up on 82, I apologize.
Oh, I'll be.
I'm just a kid.
You are. You youngin'.
Kids today, they don't understand what it was like. When I was a young man, you had to dial the phone, and John Anderson was the third-party guy then, so, you know.
That's right. He was. Yeah.
Nothing ever changes. And before him, it was a guy, I don't know if you remember him. His name was George Wallace.
Oh, I do remember George Wallace from Alabama.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and ran the most successful third-party campaign in modern history.
Oh, God.
And basically, if you listen to the forward party's, rhetoric, it is almost exactly the same as the American Independent Party from 1968.
Oh, my God.
Except for the segregation part. They don't talk about that.
Driftglass, let's talk about the forward party for a moment.
All right.
Because Andrew Yang. Now,
yes.
I have his book here. The War on Normal People, it's called. And I interviewed him during the campaign. That's when he came on the show and he sent me his book. Not only did he send me his book, I have an unopened pack of Yang 2020 bumper stickers.
Hang on to it.
Sealed, right? And he autographed the book for me.
Aww.
And what it said, I mean, a big thing. It says, Nicole, congratulations on all you do to make the world stronger. Here's to building a future to be proud of together. Andrew Yang. Now, the other thing that was in this book, believe it or not, is a business card.
Cool.
And there's a phone number on it. And
really?
It's a 917 number, which means it's a cell phone in New York. Should we call him?
Oh, sure. No, I don't think we should call
no?
him right now.
Really?
No, I'm having too much fun with him on Twitter.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'll give you the number if you want to try to call him. So if anybody wants this book, you know, I'm downsizing because we're getting ready to move. So I'm looking, you know, I started a new thing where, you know, I do art on the side because I have ADD and I keep occupied. So I found a new art form. Hold on. Now, you're not on video.
I can see you.
You can see. Right. So I found this new art form, which is folding books. Do you see this?
Yeah.
Isn't this cool?
Yes, it's beautiful.
So that's a heart, gorgeous. Right?
Yeah. Yep.
And who knew? It's just, it's an amazing thing. I think they're so cool. So I'm trying to find the right image to fold into Andrew Yang's book. What do you think I should make it into?
Well, what I'm trying to think of something that is an empty vessel that contains nothing of substance. I don't know.
Trump's brain. Donald Trump's brain.
Yeah, that'll do it. No, I'm having a lot of fun with Andrew Yang and his guys on Twitter because I have launched my own political party.
Have you?
Yes. It's called the Tesseract Party.
Okay.
Because we're not right and we're not left and we're not forward and we're not back. We reject the false duopoly of space, time, and energy.
Okay.
And we stand for nothing whatsoever except give us your money and in a couple of years we'll tell you what we stand for.
yeah, that's about it.
We have united with the Mobius Party. As you might know, the Mobius Party's motto is both sides are one side, are no side, are one side, are both sides. So all the both-siderists are welcome. And we're doing a big fundraiser, and we're going to be a mighty third party. And if you're looking for an empty vessel, that is because we believe that true reform in politics must begin at the subatomic level.
Okay.
So we reject all the space, time, and matter duopolies of left and right and up and down.
Right.
So and we're pretty successful so far. We have it's me.
Yeah.
And it's me and my other personalities and. I just have a blast watching because I have a memory of all the third parties going back, you know, to the 60s. And you remember Connecticut for Lieberman?
I do remember Connecticut. How could I forget?
Yeah. That centrist party that blamed both sides and the system.
Yes.
Like, isn't that exactly what you stand for, Forward Party? Except you don't actually have a position on any subject at all. Except
right. Do we know?
Voting?
Right. Yeah. I don't think we actually know. Much of anything about the Forward Party, except that that's their name, but we don't know what it stands for. Neither does Andrew Yang, by the way.
Well, we know that they're raising money, and we know that a month ago he said, don't worry about the money, we have plenty. So
is he going to start sending us $1,000 a month soon?
I hope so.
Me too.
That's the one good thing he had going. That UBI thing was a great idea.
I agree. Yeah.
But, you know, and then we have Donald Trump and the affidavit today. So
So have you read it?
I have read parts of it. I've heard it digested on the air.
Right.
I have my hot take, if you'd like to hear my hot take.
Yes, please.
His last line of defense will be, Trump is a whistleblower. Trump is the best whistleblower. No one blows that whistle more powerfully than Trump. And then he will turn the microphone over to Glenn Greenwald.
Oh, God.
Who will defend his mighty whistleblowing for the good of the world.
Yeah.
And that's where it'll end up.
Then we come full circle, right?
And we do.
Glenn's almost there already. So, yeah, it just makes – that's a good observation, Drift
Glass. He's a patriot. He's like Edward Snowden times a million, you know?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Glenn Greenwald. I love – Marcy Wheeler refers to him as the area substacker.
Yeah, he's. I refer to him as Spleenwald because he never has a nice thing to say about anyone who ever disagrees with him on any subject.
Right. So, and the fact that, you know, when I got into this game, you know, moved from the music side over to the news talk side, Glenn Greenwald was this serious, you know, like the serious liberal. Like he's the guy you don't fuck with. And now he's the Fox flunky.
He's Tucker Carlson's, you know, wacky
bitch.
Friend.
He's Tucker Carlson's bitch.
And back when he started the turn, I don't know if you remember this, there were like three of us in the liberal blogosphere who said, Glenn's lying a lot recently, and he's making stuff up, and he's contradicting himself, and he's sending his attack dogs to say, you know, to tear down anybody who says anything bad about him. And I think that's really suspicious. I think that is worth talking about.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's not being terribly honest, and I lost a third of my traffic. I lost half my income.
Oh, my God.
I got slammed by my allies.
For criticizing Glenn Greenwald?
Yes, for even mildly. even mildly criticizing him.
Wow.
I got renamed Drone Glass because clearly I was a jackbooted fascist thug by people I'd known since the beginning of the movement.
Uh-huh.
And I said, just wait. You know, I'm willing to take the hit, but just wait. And none of those people have shown up to say, you know what?
Wow.
Maybe you were on to something.
Maybe they followed him over to Fox.
Oh, well, it wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, that's the peril of having been in this business for, you know, almost 20 years now is I remember we say over at the Drift Glass blog, memory is the liberal superpower. We remember things. That makes us terribly dangerous.
Right. And this nation has a very, very short memory. Boy, did they forget things. It's amazing. It's infuriating. Because they don't remember. I mean, the fact that, you know, I guess I get the displeasure with Biden or whatever. But for the Democrats to be worrying that they're going to lose both houses of Congress, one, because it's the first midterm after, you know, the Democrats took power and historically that's what happens. But, you know, for the media to say it's going to be a drubbing or a. Right. Whatever,
blowout or something.
Yeah,
like that.
They, you know, and they're still, you know, you know better than anyone, Drift Glass, the horse race in the media. They live for it. They want to ratchet. It was so funny the other night with the special election in New York. Steve Kornacki just wanted to make it like suspenseful in a horse race. It was clear that the Democrat was going to win. He was far ahead. And the other guy was, yes, closing the gap, but he was never going to get there. But Steve Kornacki made it sound, oh, this could go either way. It's going to be a tough one. You're going to be here all night. You know, stop it already.
Well, I forget who said it on social media that that's the Pat Ryan election.
Yeah.
And that's actually my dear wife did postcards for voters for that election.
Oh, nice.
You know, we'll take 1% of the credit for that. Just 1%.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, you could watch the pundits go from, this is a bellwether, keep an eye on this, it's important, and then he won. It's like, oh, special elections don't mean much. Just don't pay any attention to those special elections.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and you can watch it happening at CNN. Of all places, you can watch it happening at CNN.
It's so sad.
They got bought out by a right-wing nut job. They brought on Chris Licht. I'm sure you're familiar with Chris Licht.
Yes. Now, Chris Licht came up producing Morning Joe.
Yes, now, he did. He was Joe's henchman.
He was Joe's henchman. But you know what? He'd book good guests. Back then, when he was on, it was better than it is now. I mean, now MSNBC is the refuge for the Never Trumpers.
Oh,
you know,
God,
CNN now wants to be more middle of the road. They want to be more centrist. They don't want to offend anybody. So we're going to be the station for everybody. But MSNBC is a creature unto itself because they will have the other night they had on two former Republican congressmen and some other, you know, never Trumper, not a Democrat or a liberal, a progressive in sight, but the two former Republican members of Congress and the never Trumper. Like, this is all they do.
Yes, it is. And it's one of those things that, again, if you've been doing this for a while, you can see the curve coming. You can see it coming. The minute the Never Trumpers started to populate, colonize MSNBC, I mean, you cannot swing. I wrote a long post about Charlie Sykes. People forgot, you know, who was stunned, had people on a show talking about the 90s and Gingrich, and he's staring at them like he had nothing to do with this. Like,
right.
I was never there. What, Newt Gingrich? Well, he was in my office once, but I barely remember the guy. I said, dude, you were the Rush Limbaugh of Wisconsin for 30 years. You were a power broker in the Republican Party. And now you're sitting there saying, I never had any idea any of this was going on.
Right.
Now, he's on MSNBC more often than the MSNBC logo is on MSNBC. And watching them just, MSNBC just sort of adopt the whole Bulwark people as a division of their own company.
Right.
And if you break this down, I think we've had this conversation before. If you break it down by minute and figure what is an ad cost on MSNBC, and then you multiply that by the number of times Bulwark people are on there, and it's every goddamn day.
Yep.
And the one you're referring to, I didn't see that one, but I saw the one with the Republican congressman and Frank Luntz talking about, you know, the future. Let's all work together and let us bring – and nobody brought up Frank Luntz's past.
Right, of course not.
The amount of the amount of free publicity that goes to that website is comes to the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Oh, I'm sure.
In ad time, in free ad time. And like, Jesus, could you throw a bone to the people who weren't the Rush Limbaugh of Wisconsin and
no.
who didn't build the trap that they fell into? You know, right. the people who were actually right all along.
And yes, nope. and you asked the question on your blog at driftglass.blogspot.com. Mm-hmm. Where is the liberal media? I mean, they have the Bulwark people on all the time.
All the time.
Yeah. All the time. Yeah. And others, you know, they're all there. I don't, you know, and I don't frequent those places, but I don't recall them ever, say, having Driftglass on or
Nicole Sandler.
Nicole Sandler or
put
Brad Friedman.
Digby on there.
Digby.
Digby's a
Digby,
smart,
Digby should be on all those shows.
Absolutely.
Never.
Absolutely.
Never.
And just and we do have people on our side who are good at talking and who can get on there, not swear, not insult the people, and know how to do a 30-second drop and end at the commercial. We're good at that.
Right.
And it's because we bring with us this whole 30-year, 40-year, 50-year memory.
Right.
Of how, let's talk about how we got to this place. And that's the one conversation nobody wants to have because everyone else on the panel will be implicated. It's like, you know how, hey, you know what? You love Liz Cheney. You think Liz Cheney, we should build statues of Liz. Liz Cheney dug the pit, lined the pit with punji sticks, smeared the pit with MAGA feces her entire career, and then she fell into the pit. And now we want to be mad. Now we want to worship her as some. Liz Cheney's an awful person.
She is an awful person. I applaud her for having the courage to stand up to the orange guy and his whole cabal and her whole party who've all gone nuts. So I give her credit for that. But don't for a second confuse that with her being like a decent human being.
No, no. And she's not. I mean, she is the one who begged Democrats to vote for her in the primary.
Yeah.
And then said, oh, by the way, I would never, ever, 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 ever actually vote for a Democrat in my life because they're all, you know, they're evil. She lies about Democrats murdering babies. She votes against women being able to leave the state to have an abortion. She votes against the military reporting white supremacists because she's a goddamn right-wing Republican.
Right.
And the one thing she did, which is go against Trump, was enough for everyone on her state to turn on her.
Yeah,
just like that.
Everyone, except, you know, I've got an old friend, you know, from my days in music radio. There's a really cool radio station in Jackson called The Mountain. And the program director and morning guy is an old friend of mine. He goes by the name Fish. His name is Mark Fishman. Everyone calls him Fish. So I called him on the air that morning. And said, so what's going on? He's like, well, me and everyone I know, we all crossed over to vote for her just to, you know, because the alternative is even worse.
Yes,
he said it's just madness there. And he knows who she is and he would never support her in a bigger picture. But in this instance, he did. But everything is. And now they have the, you know, what's his name? The Fed guy. They're having their Fed meetings in Jackson this week because Jackson Hole, Wyoming is where you go during the summer.
Sure.
Anyway. Right. And so and today he spoke Jerome Powell or Jerome. What's his name? Anyway, he spoke. He talked about things are going to get harder. We're going to raise interest rates even more. There's going to be some pain. And the stock market dumped 1,000 points today. Not that I follow the stock market because I don't have any money in it, but, you know, right.
I'm aware of that rich people and investment people.
Right, you know, what they care about.
Themselves when that happens. But really, Wyoming was a perfect lab experiment. Mm-hmm. If you change one variable, everyone flips. And so it's not a matter of both sides. It's not a matter of these base voters being misunderstood or we have to reach out to them or be condescending. They really are as bad as we have always told you they are.
Yes.
This is why we call them reprogrammable meatbags, because no matter what they believe on a Tuesday, if Sean Hannity tells them something on a Thursday, they'll change their mind and they'll never remember they ever said anything otherwise.
Well, the whiplash was apparent after January 6th, because that night, look, I remember being so just freaked out by everything that happened that day. And then when they came back in to finish the voting and Lindsey Graham, obviously, tipped a few during the break when they were all hiding from the insurrectionists who wanted to kill them. And he comes up and he stands up. He's like, I've been with them, but I'm out. I've had enough. I'm done. I can't. And I almost cried. I'm like, finally, they're seeing it. And then 2 days later, you know, you had Kevin McCarthy for days actually saying that on the floor, saying he's to blame. He lit the fire. He's this. And then he goes down to Mar-a-Lago to suck the mushroom dick.
Yep. Well, they put their finger in the for a moment. You're absolutely right. For a moment in history, nobody, they didn't know what they were supposed to think.
Right.
They didn't, nobody was telling them what the party line was supposed to be. So they, then this happens with a lot of Republican lies. There's a moment like a Mobius strip where there's this kind of like cognitive dissonance when the first, when the lie falls apart and there's no one telling them what they should believe, they sort of flail around and they find like a shred of conscience they might've had in their 20s. And they go, well, people hate insurrections, right? Well, then I'll be opposed to the insurrection.
Right.
And then somebody comes up to him in an airport and yells at him. Right. Then a pollster goes out and asks, what do your people actually think? Oh, they're, no, you're, this is a fascist party now. They hate democracy. They're in support of this. And Fox News gets behind it. And suddenly, and this is, the, again, the problem with memory, is that we remember this stuff.
We do.
We remember when Bill Kristol was the architect of the Iraq War, you know? And now he's a trusted MSNBC contributor.
Of course he is, right.
Like, screw that. No, 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 no. I don't want him on my team. I'll take his vote. Take his vote all day long. But I don't want him to have any say in policies in my party. You know who does get say in my party?
Who?
Joe Biden's student loan forgiveness package
Was
made possible because he hired all of Elizabeth Warren's policy wonks.
Hell yeah.
And fill them up, the people who knew the nuts and bolts of education and student loan regs, and they are the one who helped him go big. That's who I want doing policy in my party.
Right.
Elizabeth and her elves. I want Bernie's people. I want Bernie's policy people.
You and
there.
Me both.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's great. I'm for that.
Bring them back. Except now, you know, God forbid, turn on MSNBC. They're all doing the pearl clutching. Claire McCaskill, who's the former senator, is like, I don't quite understand this. I don't really know. And oh, my God, what's her name? The one who was married to Michael Hastings, Elise Jordan.
Oh, yes.
I don't understand. I mean, because they're all Republicans there.
Right. Exactly right. They're all Republicans. And this is where Dark Brandon comes in, because he had been tweeting, the White House account has been tweeting, all these assholes who are objecting, here's your PPP loan.
Oh my God.
$1.6 million forgiven. And they forgave the interest on the loan too.
Now, but, can I just tell you how disgusted I am? Let me tell you this. My husband, who for 42 years or something was an agent for Major League Baseball players who made a lot of money and paid a lot of money in taxes and never bitched about it. He said, it's my responsibility. I feel good to be able to pay this much in taxes.
That's
and
right.
in, guess what? Unemployment insurance and all this other stuff that you have to do when you own a business. But he never had any employees. Well, when his business dried up and he tried to get relief, whether through unemployment, sorry, you're not eligible, even though he paid millions of dollars into the system, and to get PPP money or some of that, nothing. He couldn't get a fucking dime. And now we see that Vern Buchanan got $2.3 million in PPP loans forgiven. Matt Gaetz got $482,321 in PPP loans forgiven. Marge Q. Green, $183,504 in PPP loans forgiven. And they're bitching that somebody who's, you know, who's a teacher who had a master's degree because her job depended on it, who makes maybe $40,000 a year and still owes $100,000 on the original $20,000 loan she took out that might get some relief. They're bitching about that. What kind of fucking upside down world is this?
Hey, if you want to interview somebody about PPP and student loan forgiveness, interview me and my wife. We have 3 kids in college.
Yes.
We run a little podcast and we do a little typing on the side. We didn't get anything. We got no PPP loans. We got no support. Our listeners are our support system and our employers.
Well, me too.
And you know what? And I am hell yes, forgive student loan debts. Mm-hmm. Lift that burden off their backs as much as you possibly can. And fix the system later if you possibly can. But for God's sakes, get that off their backs. And I got to give full credit to the White House comms team. Every time one of these Republican assholes open their mouth, they go to the PPP lookup site and they say, hey, guess who got $1 million in PPP loans forgiven? This asshole over here. And Bill Kristol said, you know, I'm a little old fashioned. I guess. I don't think that's appropriate. Like, and immediately social media was like, what is it about tweeting factual information available on a public website without comment is unprofessional or mean or unfair or snarky? That's the problem. Democrats have been taught if you punch back, it's unfair.
Right.
Let them be bullies. Let them be monsters. Let them cheat. But if you object to it, if your tone is wrong, boom, we're going to stomp on you. Like, nope.
Right.
Not doing that no more.
Right. And I got to say, my What's News roundup that I do every morning today, this line is in it. And finally, a shout out to whomever is manning the White House Twitter account for standing up to a number of Republican members of Congress who've been attacking the Biden administration over the college loan debt relief that the president announced this week. And then I went off on them. That is brilliant, pure brilliance that they're doing that. And yes, they're finally getting it.
I'm hoping that somebody at the White House looked at John Fetterman's Twitter account and said, can we do that? We can? Excellent. Let's just do that. And Joe Biden's speech yesterday.
You
know, I like Larry Hogan. I can work with Larry Hogan, but these MAGA sons of bitches are not your Republican Party, and I don't trust them. And it's now me and my party versus these fascists.
Right.
Pick, choose.
Right.
But those are your two choices, and I'll run on my record. I'll run on all the stuff that my party has done for the last 18 months.
Exactly. And you know what Charlie Crist said? He's like, you know what? I was a Republican, but you know what? And I welcome Republicans. But if you like what Ron DeSantis is doing, I don't need any haters. Don't vote for me. If you're a fan of Ron DeSantis, go. Be with him. Like,
Well, I think it was Charlie Crist who was asked about, well, what about Joe Biden? And like that implication, isn't he too old?
Yeah, and
Charlie Crist said, hell no,
he's
great.
President.
I think he's doing a great job.
Right. Yeah, I give Charlie a lot of credit. I got to get him back on the show. Drift Glass, it's so good to talk to you. So is the house empty now, or you still have a younger one there?
No. Actually, eldest son is now taking a master's courses at UIS. So he's living back at home. And both girls will be back home next weekend, we think, for Labor Day. And, you know, everyone's in motion. And all my dad stuff, you know, there was a plumbing problem at youngest child's. And I'm like, I'll get down there with a snake and a plunger. And like, no. That's
don't
cool.
Don't do that. Yeah, right. I hear you. All right. Well, it's so good to talk to you. We need to do this more often. And I always, you know, I called a couple of weeks ago and you were in the middle of all the sending off to college stuff. So I'm glad you could join us today. Please send my best to Fran. Everybody listen to the Professional Left podcast. You know, earlier, it was this week or last week, I was going through some old clips. I like going back into the archives because I've got 15 years of them. And I came across the day that the Professional Left was coined. When somebody from was it the Bush administration?
Robert Gibbs, who was snarking about the professional left, and she and I were sitting on my futon back in my condo days in Chicago, trying to think of a name. Like, oh, God bless you, Robert Gibbs.
And it was born.
One more thing, we do have another podcast. It's called Science Fiction University.
Ooh.
We're both science fiction nerds. We've only done 10 episodes, but they're awesome. And you can find us by looking at Science Fiction University. So
very cool. Yeah.
We're a media corporation, Nicole.
Well,
we have writing. We have text. We have graphics. We got podcasts. You name it, we got it.
You
got
to be, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the 2020s. All right. Drift Glass, we will talk again soon. Thank you, as always. You're the best.
My pleasure.
All right. Bye. The fabulous Drift Glass, everybody. All right. With that, that brings us to the end of another week. Oh, he's great. He really is. His writing is just stupendous. And he agrees with me most of the time. So there's that. All right. With that, we're done. The weekend is here. Let me fill you in on my schedule for next week. I plan on being here Monday and Tuesday. My surgery is Wednesday, you know, at 1 o'clock, which really sucks because I can't eat or drink anything all day. So you'd think they'd let you go in early in the morning, but no, 1 o'clock. Anyway, so I will be able to do a What's News Wednesday morning because I gotta occupy myself so I don't go in the kitchen and try to eat something. So I'll do a What's News Wednesday. It'll run, on Progressive Voices, and it'll go out as a podcast. And then I will run best of shows. I hate calling them best of, but shows. Some of your requests will be incorporated, some probably not. And they'll run through the Progressive Voices network because I'm going to be resting. So I'm not physically coming into the studio those days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Then the following Monday is Labor Day, when I usually do a music thing anyway. So I'll play Labor Day music for your Labor Day holiday enjoyment, either pre-recorded or live, depending on how I'm feeling. And then I should be back live in action Tuesday of next week, the following week. All right. So anyway, I'm here. I don't know what I'll be able to see, if anything, but I'll be here Monday and Tuesday. So, business as usual. All right. Okay. Thank you, everybody. I have no wise words of wisdom to part with. So I'll just say, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And, go dark, Brandon. Let's go dark, Brandon. All right. See ya. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The federal magistrate who authorized the search warrant for Mar-a-Lago a few weeks ago on Thursday ordered the Justice Department to unseal a redacted version of the affidavit that was used to justify the warrant and to unseal it by noon on Friday. So we all sat waiting as 12 noon came and went, and then learned that the PACER system had crashed. That's how they disseminate information throughout the federal court system, apparently. Well, when the redacted 37-page document was finally received by those who could interpret it some 30 minutes later, we finally began learning some of the details. Right off the bat, on page 2, this paragraph. Quote, there is probable cause to believe that additional documents that contain classified NDI, National Defense Intelligence, or that are presidential records subject to record retention requirements currently remain at the premises. There is also probable cause to believe that evidence of obstruction will be found at the premises. Obviously, there's much more than that in 37 pages, much of it redacted, but there's a lot there. It's available to read now online. I've got a copy of it posted with today's What's News at NicoleSandler.com/news. In other news, in the wake of the extreme court overturning Roe v. Wade, trigger laws have been popping up around the nation. On Thursday, three states, Idaho, Tennessee, and Texas laws banning abortions with few exceptions, all went into effect. A similar trigger law, passed previously and designed to be enforced only after Roe was struck down, goes into effect in North Dakota today. And an Oklahoma law imposing higher criminal penalties for performing illegal abortions goes into effect Saturday, tightening an existing state ban. The changes in these five states will sharply restrict access to abortion for about 10 million women of reproductive age between 15 and 49. Some of them are facing court challenges, but that's not good enough. Vote, please. Thankfully, there's some pushback on the right-wing authoritarian policies taking hold across the country. A three-judge federal appeals court panel on Thursday barred the state of Arkansas from enforcing its ban on gender-affirming medical care for transgender children. They upheld a lower court decision temporarily blocking the 2021 law. The judges stating, quote, because the minor's sex at birth determines whether or not the minor can receive certain types of medical care under the law, Act 626 discriminates on the basis of sex. Well, the lower court will hold an October trial on whether or not to permanently block the law. Arkansas was the first state to prohibit doctors from providing gender-confirming hormone treatment, puberty blockers, or surgery to people under the age of 18. The state's Republican attorney general said his office will ask the full appeals court to review the, quote, dangerously wrong decision. There was nothing wrong about it. The former guy's legal troubles just keep piling up. Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis has called for former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows to testify before the grand jury in Atlanta that's investigating the former guy's efforts to overturn Georgia's 2020 presidential election results. Willis, who's overseeing that investigation, ordered Meadows to appear on September 27th. She's also seeking testimony on September 22nd from former Trump attorney Sidney Powell and cyber researcher James Waldron. A filing in the case says Meadows, quote, was involved in setting up the call in which Trump pressed Georgia's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to find enough votes to reverse his loss in the state to Biden. Now, with the former guy banned from Twitter and other social media platforms, he started his own, the Orwellian-named Truth Social, to spew his venom and lies. Well, Truth Social appears to be in some financial trouble. According to Fox Business, one of the platform's largest vendors and creditors, a company called RightForge, is accusing Truth Social of reneging on its contractually obligated monthly payments. What a shock, or not? The payment is for work that RightForge did in setting up the platform's online infrastructure. Kind of a big deal. RightForge claiming Truth Social made only three payments and nothing since March. They say Truth Social now owes them over $1.6 million. Yeah, good luck getting that. And finally, a shout out to whomever is manning the White House Twitter account for standing up to a number of Republican members of Congress who've been attacking the Biden administration over the college loan debt relief plan that the president announced this week. For instance, Marjorie Taylor Greene complained on Newsmax, quote, for our government just to say, okay, your debt is completely forgiven, it's completely unfair. Well, in response, the White House tweeted, quote, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene had $183,504 in PPP loans forgiven. Oops. But wait, there's more. To Vern Buchanan's complaints that it's reckless and unfair, the White House tweeted, quote, Congressman Vern Buchanan had over $2.3 million in PPP loans forgiven. $2.3 million? To Matt Gaetz, who tweeted his objection to more funding for Ukraine, the White House tweeted, Congressman Matt Gaetz had $482,321 in PPP loans forgiven. Wow. And there were many, many more. Representatives Kevin Hearn, over $1 million. Mike Kelly, $987,000. Mark Wayne Mullen, over $1.4 million, to name just a few. Republicans, in addition to being liars and crooks, are hypocrites. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.